Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This episode contains some strong language. Listener discretion is advised.
Sort of executed this perfect commando role and was straight up on his feet.
Exclamation of things like, "Aye, aye, I'm on Galcho," you know, "Oh no, are you joking?
I'm all this for all this just for this paltry amount of drugs." And
we've done all this for sort of what looked like about 3 kilos of heroin. I think it was 40 grams of heroin into each block of plaster of Paris. We're hoping to fool the distribution syndicate in Australia. What the fuck's going on?
Catching Worms, a Hong Kong true crime podcast. The Wee had set sail around 4 p.m, sailing out of Stanley Harbour past Po Toi and out towards the location marked on the map for the intercept to take place. It was dark, it was raining, and the intercept boat was having troubles at sea. But by luck, as Chief Inspector Les Bird recalls, they had spotted the yacht carrying the undisclosed cargo and 4 undercover police officers. Under the cover of darkness, the intercept launch's cover story of being a group of guaylos out for a fishing trip had gone out the window. Aboard the Wee, Roberto saw the intercept boat and was suspicious, as Bill Renwick describes.
They started coming towards us, and that was the trigger for, basically, Roberto, I think, must have suddenly thought, this doesn't look quite right, this boat is coming straight towards us now. He must have just suddenly clicked, hang on, this is all not right, there's this boat coming in towards us, and for some reason he must have just thought, hang on, and suddenly realised who Rod was, that he was an undercover policeman. And he, for some reason, went down below. Rod was a bit worried about why he was going down below. Was he going to get a weapon or something like that? So he followed him down below. And at that point, I just had to stay up and keep an eye on Kenny.
Kenny, the surprise passenger, the triad gang member who had arrived on the Wee that day out of the blue to guard this precious cargo.
As the boat was nearing us, I suddenly heard this sort of squawk from down below. So I presume Rod was engaged with Roberto, and Kenny heard this as well. He started moving towards the towards the companionway to go down below to see what was going on, and that's when I kind of leapt on him.
The arrests were underway. The plan was being put into action, and it had caught them off guard.
It was as a clear indication of how little they suspected, because he just didn't even think to look around at me. He just sort of heard this noise downstairs and started heading towards the companionway. So, yeah, I just came from behind, from the after deck, sort of descended on him from height. So he didn't, you know, 15 stone from that from that direction. He didn't really stand much chance. And at the same time, I'm thinking, what on earth is going on with Rod? You know, I need to get down there.
Rod had followed Roberto down the three steps into the living quarters. Roberto was stood in the kitchen galley looking through a porthole, trying to work out what this boat heading towards them was up to. This is where Rod found him.
I dived into the galleyway down into the main cabin because Roberto was down there in the galley. And I approached Roberto from behind. I put my arms basically through his armpits and interlocked my hand behind his head so that he couldn't use his arms, which didn't stop him sort of swinging his right hand and trying to stab me repeatedly. And the more stabbing attempts he did, the more serious I thought this is getting. So I was then forcing him down and banging his head off the sink in the galley, which in some respects subdued him, but in others was bad because when his head hit the sink, his arms were then above his head and he was able to grab a knife that had been in the kind of dish drying thing. So he then started trying to stab me with that, which I guess because it had a longer blade. And at that point, I suppose there was quite a lot of shouting. It's hard to accurately say what happened because all of these things happen in a flash of a moment, although they probably took 2 or 3 minutes. In your head, it's going at a million miles an hour. And Bill came down into the galley and said, if you'll forgive the language, something like, what the fuck's going on? And I said, I don't know, this bugger won't stop resisting. And it was more or less at that point that Roberto just stopped all his struggles and relaxed. And we'd previously secured cable ties into the waist of the shorts we were wearing. So I pulled one out and zipped it onto Roberto's hands and then said to him, what the fuck are you doing? And he said, I didn't know you were police. I thought you were just trying to take over the boat. And bearing in mind that he'd spent millions of dollars putting heroin on the boat, I suppose his answer was actually not unreasonable.
So did you not shout, when you came into the galley, did you not shout, stop, police, or this, you're under arrest, or?
It's really strange, isn't it? It never occurred to me. It was so obvious to me that I presumed it was obvious to Roberto as well. But no, I didn't say police until after Bill had come down into the main cabin. And as soon as I said it, he gave up all resistance.
So whilst all this was going on in the galley of the Wee, Les was trying to navigate the choppy waters at night, bringing the intercept launch alongside the Wee, so that the officers on his boat could jump ship and support with the arrests. In the last episode, we left Les on the flying bridge where he was being shot at.
So I got really annoyed about that. Not only has my boat broken down and I've only got one engine, and I'm trying to get alongside this yacht in the dark, now somebody's just taken a shot at me because I'm standing on the flying bridge. So I decided to try and get this done as quickly as possible. So I drove our yacht into the side of their yacht, a motor cruiser. And everybody got knocked over, everybody on the yacht fell over. And I managed to bring it round parallel to their yacht, our boat, just for a few seconds. And the two boats, I'll put my hands up, the two boats were doing this. Because it really was very bad weather at the time.
At this point, Les raises his hands to the same height and then moves them up and down. The boats were bobbing up and down out of sync, so crossing over between one boat to the other would be really difficult.
A fraction of about 2 or 3 seconds when the boats were level, and I shouted down to the MB guys to jump, and they did, fortunately. Went careering across the deck. And then I put it in reverse and I pulled away, so leaving them to do their job. So we just sort of managed to get it there, but it was 50% luck, really was.
The team had to make 5 arrests. Kenny, the triad gang member, and Roberto, the prime suspect.
And at that stage, that was just almost seconds later, the support launch came careering in and literally sort of crashed into us. Guys sort of flew off that boat and landed on our boat, and it all came in and started helping with the arrests. This chap, Raymond Lau, I clearly remember to this day when the Narcotics Bureau launch kind of hit us side on. It was a bit harder than anyone expected, and he literally was sort of flung onto the yacht Wee, but he sort of executed this perfect commando role and was straight up on his feet and came over and started dealing with Kenny.
But they also had to keep John's cover story intact so that it wasn't obvious to Roberto and Kenny that he was the informant. Bill Renwick was in charge of his arrest.
Well, that actually hurt, you know. I kind of fairly roughly pinned him to the ground, cuffed him, you know, and sort of shouting at him a lot and this sort of thing. And, you know, we really didn't want John getting in any, under any suspicion here as to being an informant. So, you know, I need to get on and start making it look like I'm arresting John as well. Yeah, there was a lot of shouting, a lot of always concerned about not giving any suspicion that John was the informant or that Nick and Debbie were undercover police.
Nick and Debbie, the last two to be arrested. The purpose of arresting Nick and Debbie was so that Roberto and Kenny did not think that John had hired 4 undercover police officers as the crew.
Now, Debbie and Nick, when we went over, which is when we broke from being undercover and took enforcement action, both Debbie and Nick never declared their police identity. And so we arrested them too. And the reason we did that was so that the bad guys would not be able to kind of go, wow, that was a bit strange. Everybody we hired were police officers.
Yeah, and then they were all bundled onto the launch. And to this day, I can remember the look on Nick's face when he was sort of on his knees with his hands cuffed behind his back on the back of the Narcotics Bureau launch, and they're about to be taken away for processing. He kind of looked over at me like, I really drew the short straw here, didn't I? Yeah, it had started raining as well. He was like, this isn't any fun.
Now that the arrests had been made, the next stage was to search the boat. They had to find this undisclosed cargo to make the arrests stick.
I mean, as soon as Roberto and John and Kenny all had plastic cuffs on them, we then took them up and transferred them over to the INSEP launch. And then I took over as skipper and turned us round, and we headed back up towards Titan. We wanted to, by then we were under cover of darkness. We wanted to go somewhere where we could secure the vessel and search it, because you couldn't really do a search for drugs whilst wallowing about on the high seas.
I then was asked to escort the yacht back to Titan. We decided to go back into Titan because it was actually quite rough and we couldn't do any searching or anything out at sea. So I drove the motor yacht back to Titan, knowing that there was a hole in the bow, by the way. So I was a bit worried because I didn't have time to go and check to see what was wrong. Afterwards, NB were really pissed off because I'd put a big hole in both boats. There was damage to the bow of our motor cruiser, and I'd also put a bit of a dent in the side of the yacht.
Les was in a bit of trouble, but the bigger problem right now was, where were the drugs hidden? Did they have grounds for the arrest?
The INSEP launch was tied up against a pontoon in Titan, so we moored beside it. And then everybody came back on board, including exhibits officers. They brought Roberto and John and Kenny back on board, because when you seize drugs, you do it in the presence of the person that you've arrested, so that he can't at some later date in court say, I never saw those. Those didn't come from my boat. They produced them out of something else.
I remember, so it was really the Narcotics Bureau team who were now searching the boat and pulling up, you know, floorboards and starting to look at where they might be. They were drawing a complete blank.
They are drawing a complete blank. Do you have any ideas where they are? Do you remember in episode 3, Rod had some important prep work aboard the boat?
I would go to the boat and we were doing general maintenance. I was also told that the fresh water tanks had sprung a leak, so I had to go and buy plastic jerry cans, which I did. I ended up buying about 20 in a couple of trips. And then I would splice a sort of 1 meter length of rope onto the jerry can, which is forming a loop and then binding the rope back into itself so that it's secure, so that the jerry cans could be tied around the decking on the Wii to put fresh water into.
So there was no water inside the actual water tanks that had been fitted aboard the boat. So what was in there?
And then someone obviously thought about the water tanks, and they opened the first one, and there was just practically nothing in there. And I can remember just the mood. Everyone kind of thought, blimey, all this for all this just for this paltry amount of drugs. And
so we brought them back and opened the water tanks. And of course, when we opened the port side water tank, there wasn't very much in it, and that elicited enormous disappointment from us, thinking we've done all this for sort of what looked like about 3 kilos of heroin.
3 kilos of heroin. At this time, that could have been worth as little as $70,000. The narcotics team had brought a boat, spent thousands of man hours in undercover and surveillance for 3 kilograms. Had they got this all wrong? Was Roberto a small-time player? 3 kilograms wouldn't lead them to a massive drug syndicate in Sydney, just a small-time dealer. 3 kilograms could be hid in the tyre of a car or a suitcase. Why did they need to sail a yacht to Sydney for just 3 kilograms? There had to be more.
Yeah, there was that real sort of sudden sinking feeling, and then they opened the other water tank and it was absolutely chock full. And I can remember thinking, I don't know how on earth we would have made it to Australia, because there's just not enough water to last us anyway, near as much. I knew we had some bottles on board as well. But yeah, I can remember being a bit surprised that, you know, our entire water stocks had been replaced by the drugs. So,
And then once we opened the starboard side, it was packed to the brim, and there was significant elation from us that, you know, everything had been worthwhile.
And then they found the drugs in the water tanks of the yacht, and we started to bring all the blocks of heroin out, and they stacked it up on the deck. With quite a big pile, actually. And then we called in more marine police boats to help out with the arrested people and the evidence.
Relief. They had found the drugs. But how much? And how much was it worth?
Oh, well, I mean, anything over a kilo is a major seizure. The weight, 40 kilograms, yes, that's an enormous case and a big reward. The value, I wasn't in the business of giving the value, but I do remember that they said the 43 kilos was worth 380 million Hong Kong.
At that time, it was the biggest seizure of pure grade heroin in the history of the Hong Kong police.
A massive seizure of heroin. I don't think I knew at the time, because again, I wasn't in Narcotics Bureau. I don't think I knew quite how big it was. And it was only really when it started emerging in the papers that it was Hong Kong's largest ever seizure that I realised quite how big. But we knew it was substantial. I mean, it took, you know, good while just to unload it all out of the water tanks, and we were photographing every block as it came out, so we had that chain of evidence.
The decks were piling up with blocks of heroin, and the narcotics team were jumping for joy inside. This part of the sting was over, their covers were blown, and they had two prime suspects in custody. I asked Bill how he felt climbing into bed that night after an eventful day.
And do you remember that feeling that night when you got into bed and you were looking up at the ceiling? You know, all of the what could have, would have happened thoughts.
Do you know, to be honest with you, I think I just went out like a light. I was exhausted by then. The whole sort of emotion of it all and the relief that we'd actually successfully done the arrest and we'd actually found a good seizure of heroin. So, I think, just relief. And I slept like a baby.
But some of the team weren't lucky enough to go to sleep just yet.
It was another quite a funny ending to it is that after they got all the drugs and were really happy and they'd arrested the guys and they formally cautioned them, they took all the drugs and everybody got onto this all singing, all dancing Marine police launch and shot off. And someone said, oh, do you mind taking the boat back to Aberdeen? So they just left me on my own with this motor cruiser on one engine and a hole in the bow, and it was now probably 3 o'clock in the morning, so it was still dark. So I just drove it really, really slowly all the way around south of Hong Kong into Hong Kong Harbour. I came in going towards Causeway Bay Typhoon Shelter, which is where I was supposed to take it and leave it. And I just came in the harbour just as it was getting daylight on my own. And it was then that I realized what, you know, you start to think back about, because during the actual interception itself, you don't have time to think about, is this dangerous? Is it not? Is it, you just get on and do it. And having that hour and a half or 2 hours driving back through the harbor on my own at 5 in the morning, it started to sink in. And I started to reflect about all the things that could go wrong, could have gone wrong. And someone could have got hurt. You know, when I took the boat alongside their yacht in heavy weather, the four guys jumping over, you know, if we'd have got that wrong, someone could have got seriously hurt there. You know, if one of them had fallen in darkness, it's very, very difficult to pull someone out of the sea at night to try and find them. You know, someone could have got crushed between the two boats. So, you know, it was then that I started to sort of think, well, that was actually quite dangerous. After I parked the boat, it was already daylight in Causeway Bay. It was about 7 in the morning. And I suddenly realized I was absolutely, really, really tired. And I was just glad to go home.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The arrest now had to be processed, But this was still an undercover operation, as narcotics inspector Rod Mason explains.
The people who'd been arrested were taken off, again, by the intercept launch, back round to Aberdeen, to Marine Police South Base in Aberdeen, where they were transferred to nondescript high ace vans and taken back to police headquarters to Narcotics Bureau. Because the whole point was we were trying to keep the arrests as low profile as possible. And even when they were taken to court, we asked for an in-camera hearing. In-camera just basically means no public are allowed into the courtroom. And we'd had to explain to the magistrate that we'd be seeking a remand in police custody and that all the arrested persons were happy with the remand in police custody, but that it was our intention to conceal the arrest because we were hoping to fool the distribution syndicate in Australia into believing that when the arrested persons showed up, that they'd got there by yacht.
Having been remanded in custody, Kenny and Roberto were placed under 24-hour armed guard and thoroughly interviewed. The police had made a bargain with them. If they helped to identify the suspects and lead them to the distributors in Australia, a reduction in sentence looked promising. Roberto was to play a key part in the next stage of the operation.
And so how did he assist you? Who did you go after next?
Well, they were held in a safe house in Hong Kong, and then they were flown under police escort by both the Hong Kong police and the Australian Federal Police down to Sydney, by which time the government chemist in Hong Kong, who does all the analysis on drugs, had recreated all the blocks of heroin out of plaster of Paris, and he drilled a small hole into each one and then inserted, I think it was 40 grams of heroin into each block of plaster of Paris. And that was done so that if somebody in Australia was caught in possession of one block, it still had a trafficable quantity of heroin inside the block, but that we weren't losing, you know, a whole kilogram. So that was all prepared. It was all wrapped in the same wrapping that the seizure had come in. We then flew them under escort to Sydney, and they were retained in Australian Federal Police custody in safe houses for 7 weeks, because we worked out that the trip from Hong Kong to Australia should take about 7 weeks. So after 7 weeks, they phoned a number that Roberto had been given to say that they'd arrived in Sydney. Roberto was then given another number, an Australian number, which he phoned, and an arrangement for the handover of the bag containing the purported drugs was made.
And was Roberto willing to go along with this ruse?
Yes, I mean, they were taken into custody, and it was explained to them that they were facing basically between 25 and 30 years in prison, and that if they helped the police by assisting us to arrest other people, then the police would stand up and say that they'd been very beneficial to the police, and that would equate to a reduction in sentence. And that's what happened. In fact, on conviction, Roberta received 23 years, which was then reduced to 11 years because of his assistance.
The operation had taken Operation Clinker down under, and the handover of the drugs had to happen in order to warrant the arrests of the syndicate in Australia. So the Plaster of Paris fake drug blocks arrived in Sydney.
The handover took place. Australian Federal Police surveillance followed everything. The bag containing the fake drugs was fitted with a microphone, so we were able to listen to everything that happened, which was all in Cantonese. The Australian Federal Police had a Cantonese-speaking officer, and he listened to the great excitement of the group as they opened the bag and saw the bags, And then they decided to break one of the blocks of heroin to test it for the quality of the heroin. And when he hit it with a hammer, it exploded into powder. And in fact, every block had been fitted with luminescent powder so that everybody in the room was covered in luminescent powder. And that was to prove who had been present when the drugs were opened. And as soon as they heard that break being done and great exclamation of things like, "Aye, I'm a gaucho," you know, "Oh no, are you joking?" Things like that. The Australian Federal Police then kicked the door down and arrested everybody inside the room.
It really was an impressive operation on their part, NB, to actually, and then keep it a secret and sail a replica with substitute drugs all the way down to Sydney, and affect the arrest of the bad guys down there too.
So impressive that it made the headlines. On the 11th of November 1988, Asia Week reported that Hong Kong and Sydney police arrested 30 ethnic Asians in the largest joint Hong Kong and Australia narcotic sting ever. That was Operation Clinker. But I still had some unanswered questions.
Do you know when Roberto found out that John was in on it?
Even up until that point, John was still being treated as an arrested person. After that all happened, the three of them were brought back to Hong Kong. Roberto and Kenny were taken off to a police safe house and then taken back to court. When the police then said, "Okay, we no longer need these people in police custody. They can be handed over to correctional services and retained in and detained in prison custody." And John was with them, but all charges against John were dropped. So I guess at that point, Roberto must have been thinking, why are they dropping all the charges against him? So John then turned around from the court and walked out. And although John hung around and was involved in lots of debriefing and received a reward payment, which was fairly substantial, although I do apologise, Susie, I'm not allowed to give the details of exactly how much money, but it would have been enough for him to have bought the boat.
So Roberto went to prison, not being entirely sure who was in on it. I had one more question for Rod Mason, author of Operation Clinker.
Do you think he'll read your book?
I don't know. I haven't really thought about it. I don't know. Maybe he will. Maybe it'll fill in a few of the questions that he's had all these years.
But the real mystery of this case still stands to this day.
And where are you being shot at?
Ah, no. Nobody to this day knows what that bloody explosion was from the yacht. We were convinced, the NB guys. I remember one of them turning up and looking up at me and saying, "We're being shot at," and then diving into the cabin. And I thought, "Oh, great, thanks, thanks for letting me know." No one can figure out what that was. But as I said in my book, Winston Churchill is reported as saying, "There's nothing more exhilarating than being shot at and not being hit." And yeah, that's true, actually. It was exhilarating. I think that's probably a term I wouldn't have used.
In recognition of the bravery and success of the operation, Rod and Les were awarded the Commissioner's Commendation and Bill, Nick and Debbie a Commanding Officer's Commendation for their roles in Operation Clinker. On top of the formal awards and ceremonies, the team celebrated with a slap-up fish dinner and a few beers on Lammer Island, famous for having some of the best seafood in Hong Kong. Next time on Catching Worms.
Of course, he was a friend of mine. I mean, I had no idea that he was homosexual.
His entire life was about to collapse.
Well, you have to remember, in these days, it was buggery was a life sentence. Was found the next day dead.
That was a sufficient motive for someone to want to kill him.
There was no clear evidence of anyone hearing the gunshots. Or he would bring the embarrassment on the police force.
And all the things they hadn't done came back to haunt them. Please, please tell my family that this was an accident and that I am a good police officer.
This has been a Create podcast. Make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button so you never miss an episode. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, then please leave us a review and a 5-star rating. It helps others to find us. You can follow us on Instagram at CatchingWormsHK. With special thanks to Rod Mason, author of Operation Clinker, published by Austin McCauley, Bill Renwick, and author of Small Band of Men, Les Bird. And thank you for listening.
Catching worms. Zhuk chong. This term means to get yourself into trouble, causing unnecessary difficulties. It may seem like an odd phrase, but this slang is often used as an abbreviation of the full saying zhuk chong yap si fat. That involves putting said worms up your rear end, which to anyone's imagination definitely spells trouble indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.